Hello and good evening. Welcome to ABW Radio Live. I am your resident pirate, and here to talk about Arsenal and stuff. So, as you probably know, home or away, win or lose, ABW Radio is your place to share Arsenal views. Da -da 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 -da. Anyway, hello. I've got Josh and I've got Ellis with me. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello.
Obviously, we've already discussed this before we came online. Ross didn't. Ross, for fuck's sake, I'm doing a Danny now. Ellis didn't get the memo of what we were all supposed to wear this evening, so he's gone sort of full rogue. Josh clearly did, and his looks slightly better than mine, which is annoying. But anyway, 5-0, nice. Danny, you can shut your face straight away, by the way. People always ask me whenever we do these shows, why isn't Danny here? I'll tell you why Danny's not here, because he's a lazy shit. He's in bed. That's why. Anyway, Southampton 0, Arsenal 5. Now, we're going to obviously go into details of the game and discuss all bits and bobs. But as usual, when I'm on this fine vessel, I like to get people's thoughts on how they felt about the game. So, Josh or Ellis? Ellis, let's go with you first. What did you think about the game overall, and your sort of thoughts when the team was released?
I think when I got my little notification coming up with the team, I thought, "Oh, that's quite a few changes there. That's a bit risky." And then obviously went on the Sky Sports app and had a look at Southampton's team and thought, "Right, well, I only recognise two of their players, so we might actually do all right here." But when you asked if I could come on the show, I did say, "Oh, I don't mind coming on talking about getting knocked out of yet another cup by Southampton." But that clearly wasn't the case. We sort of obviously they made a lot of changes, and it was definitely. You could see that in the performance they had. They didn't really have anyone of any merit in midfield that was doing anything. They had Shane Long and a couple of other sort of usual suspects out there, but Redmond was rested. And really, we just sort of got the two goals from Welbeck quite early on. And even though they had a little period after those two goals where Southampton tried to creep back into it, then obviously I think Walcott got the third goal, and then they were never in it really. And it was just a case of just going through the matches. We never really seemed to get out of third or fifth gear, but the quality of the opposition wasn't great on the day. But we got through to the next round, and that's all that really matters. So yeah, happy with that overall performance.
Well summed up. I'm sure we'll find somebody who wasn't happy with something today, because they all lurk in deep dark corners. Josh, what was your thoughts again? Team lineups, first impressions of what we were going to play, and overall thoughts on the game as a whole.
Yeah, the lineup was a bit of a curveball, naming borderline six wingers in our front six, which yeah, I think raised a few concerns because defensively it didn't look very good. Fortunately, Southampton are prone to not really pressing teams at the moment, especially in this game, which is where I think the decision paid off. Not sure where Rambo and the Cock were, but glad they missed out anyway, because we'll need them for bigger games.
Yes, there's so many positives to take from tonight. And before we get into the game, no, we're not going to sit here and bash players or say, oh, well, it's only Southampton, all this. We'll take it into context, but I think praise is where it's due this evening. So that's what we will be giving it. So obviously, the lineup came out and it was a little bit surprising, I think it's fair to say. I did a match preview last night, and I have to confess, most of the players I had were not in that starting lineup, so quite surprising. Ellis, were you obviously that we mentioned, like Josh said, essentially like the six wingers, quote unquote. Ainsley, Maitland-Niles, conservative, starting in the holding role, not the Rob holding role, the other holding role, and also the position of sort of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain centrally. Good performances from both, fair to say.
Yeah, I think you make a fair point there. We were talking in our sort of pro clubs WhatsApp chat about the Ox starting in centre mid, and I said I was a bit worried about him playing in that position. I thought he doesn't retain the ball quite as well as a centre mid should. I thought he'd probably turn it over quite a bit, but I was really impressed with the performance that he put out today. He made some good sort of passes coming out from the midfield position, good range of passes as well, and I thought he'd done the job quite well. I know it's hard to make any real sort of judgments considering the opposition. It's basically Southampton's youth team that are out there today. But you can only do as well as the team that's put out in front of you. And I thought they both sort of played well. I thought Maitland-Niles was a bit sort of, he looked a bit lost in the first half, even though obviously we dominated quite well. And I think it is hard for the lad because he's been played everywhere. I'm not even sure what position he's meant to be, if he's a right mid or if he's a centre mid or whatever, but he's been playing right back in the Capital One or League Cup, we want to call it now. He was playing right back there in a few games this season. So he has sort of played everywhere. But considering that a lot of those players, like Josh mentioned, are sort of wide players playing in those central positions, they put out a good account for themselves, really. And I was quite impressed with Ox's performance. Whether that's something he can do and possibly against better opposition, I don't know. But it's worth a try in these sort of games in the FA Cup if we come up against another team that we know aren't going to have quite as much quality as ourselves. But yeah, I was impressed with their performances.
Yeah, well said. We will sort of speak about individual players in a bit more depth in a minute, but I just want to kind of scattergun through it at the start before we go into the goals. Josh, the other area that sort of majorly of note was Danny Welbeck was playing up front, Lucas Perez coming in on one side of the pitch as well, and Jeff Ray and Adelaide the other side. That sort of attacking trio, if you will, they linked up very, very well. I say we'll come on to the goals in a second, but it's a good sign, isn't it, that you've got players who, especially in those three cases, they're not first team regulars at the moment, but they're clearly showing they understand the system, they know how we're playing, and could easily step in at any time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we also got a name, Walcott, in that, who was out on the right, making sure the pitch was as big as possible by dragging a defender out with him, making sure he got a bit of chalk on his boots, so to speak. But bringing those three players in, yeah, that's definitely what we need coming into the tail end of the season. Some decent players, and the Jeff was absolutely superb in the game today. Did remind me a little bit of Diaby with the way that he carries the ball through midfield and the distribution. I think if he bulks up a little bit more, we could see him move further back on the pitch rather than a number 10, especially with Alex Iwobi coming through and flourishing there.
I'm under strict instructions from Mr. Davies to shut you down if you compare him to anybody else. I'll let you off that one. I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean. It's the sort of the style, the ranginess, isn't it? The sort of body positions, etc. I think he's a long way off being that kind of athlete. But like you say, you know, when other players first signed, they were skinny and breaky and cumbersome, and then they grew into superstars. So you just never know, do you? You never know. Okay, so let's sort of go into the goals then. Alice, the first goal from Danny Welbeck, 15th minute. The Arsenal started the game very, very well, thoroughly deserved the lead at that point. We're playing some excellent stuff. Lovely ball from Aisley Maitland-Niles through the midfield, which has kind of gone under the radar a little bit, but it was a lovely pass through. Inside to Lucas Perez, who sort of almost did a Giroud type of assist with the kind of the rolling the foot over the ball and sliding it into that open channel, perfectly weighted. And then Danny Welbeck finished like he's been finishing for 20 years. I mean, it's like he hadn't been away with that finish. What did you make of it?
Yes, definitely something that Danny Welbeck offers you in comparison to Giroud. He's one of those players that does have pace and can get in behind the defence. And that was the sort of ball that he likes to feed on. And similarly for his second goal was another sort of ball where he sort of ran in behind the defence, locked on, had a good touch and buried it. And it is good to have that sort of option, because recently we've gone back or reverted back to sort of Alexis Sanchez playing on the wide areas on the left midfield and then Giroud up top. But you couldn't really drop Giroud because he was, until the last game, scoring pretty much in every game he played. But it does give us another option, obviously, with when Walcott's fit now as well as he seems to be. I think Walcott and Sanchez work quite good up there up front because they've both got pace. So it's good to have options. With Giroud, you've got someone who's a bit stronger, a bit better in the air, good at hold-up play. But with the likes of Sanchez and Welbeck, you've got pace there. But obviously Welbeck, he seems a bit more physical. He's a bit more tall than Sanchez. So he might be sort of like a halfway between those two guys. But it's all about trying to keep him fit and easing him back in. This is probably only, is it his first start? I think I'm right in saying.
First start.
Since he's been injured. So it's you've got to take it slowly. You've got to ease him back into him. He was, I think last year in that sort of Leicester game, he was again really pinnacle and sort of getting the winner there and coming on. And we had to sort of play him then because we were desperate, and then obviously broke down and it led to him having to have surgery. But now we sort of, with Lucas as well, we have got options there and we don't necessarily have to rush him back. And if a game isn't quite going the way it is going with Giroud up top or with Alexis Sanchez up top, we can sort of bring on Welbeck. And I think he's got a lot to offer to us when he's fit, and it's good to see him sort of starting and getting the two goals, really. So I was very happy with his performance and the two goals that he got. I think they were both good.
Yes, I completely agree. And everybody now, like a new signing. Josh, what did you make of that second goal? Another lovely pass from Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Basically dissected the entire Southampton middle area or final third with one ball through. And then once again, Danny Welbeck, lovely finish. His body shape was good, strength to hold off the defender. Didn't have to blast into the net, just a cushion finish. I think it went underneath the goalkeeper. And his second goal of the game, and he just looked so sharp, didn't he? That goal and the first half in general.
Yeah, certainly. It's something that I don't think we've seen from a player to come back so quickly from an injury. I think that's all credit to Wenger for kind of holding him back for a bit, making sure he got his match fitness up and sharpness. But yeah, to come back in and get two goals like that, we'll have to put a little bit of a caveat on that. That's a 21-year-old goalkeeper making, you know, his first team debut, I think, for Southampton. And that back four has not played together at all this season. I think Gardos had making his first start as well. So they had to try and settle into the game. And it came 4 minutes after the first goal, which I think they hadn't got back to regrouping. So it's good to hit them whilst they were still cold and establish that lead.
It's the way John Welsh likes his women, likes to hit them when they're still cold. But yeah, it was definitely sort of a good platform to build on at 2-0 up. That keeper, by the way, Southampton keeper, I'm not convinced he was allowed out after dark without supervision. 21, I think he looked about 14. He looked so young, didn't he? Bless him. A very good platform to build on at 2-0. I don't know about you guys, but it felt like game over even at that stage. Southampton had sort of very little to offer. But nevertheless, they sort of had a couple of breakaways and, at that stage to go 2-1. Oh, so there's a goal there. Lovely. It's a goal for my Lorient boys. Happy days. Do you remember Sylvain Morveau? Probably not. Used to play for Newcastle. Anyway, once we got into that sort of 2-0 position, it was fairly comfortable. But any goal back for Southampton would have caused some stress. But Ellis, we really didn't have much to worry about, did we? Because Theo Walcott popped up with the third goal on 35 minutes, assisted by Danny Welbeck this time. Pulled back sort of from the byline. And Theo's movement is actually very good, I thought. Sort of coming in off the line and then checking back out and then checking back in across the defender and flicking it home. And good goal for Theo on his return. 3-0 and comfortable at that stage, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I was a bit sort of worried at some points. Like after those two goals that Danny Welbeck had got, Southampton did try to get a bit of a foothold on the game and they did sort of get into chances where they had the opportunity to score, but they just didn't really take them. They had a few poor chances. Our defenders got back and made crucial interceptions. And then, like you said, in the end, Theo popped up with a goal. I thought it was pretty poor defending from the Southampton player, but I think I'm right in saying that he normally plays right mid. I'm not actually sure, but I don't think he's used to playing at right back. And to be honest, you'd expect a defender really to get to that ball before Theo Walcott got to there, but obviously Theo Walcott showed a bit more desire than that player, and he poked it away, and in the end that was the goal that went and set him on the way for a hat-trick, really. So you can only, like I said, you can only play who's in front of you, and I think some of those players were a bit poor, but I think we did play well, and the likes of that sort of that movement of that front three of Welbeck and Walcott and some of the other players getting there. So, like Josh said, keep going back to it. You've got your sort of right wide players playing in midfield. They've all got sort of pace and they all can go out wide. And there was a lot of movement there. And the Southampton team just couldn't really cope with it. And not to go too far into the match, but then when you start bringing on Alexis Sanchez, like they must have thinking, what the fuck's going on here? Why are they bringing on more players? They're already winning. So they did have a bit of a torrid time, but it was a good goal. And it definitely put the nerves to bed after we got that third one. You didn't really see Southampton coming back into it at all after that goal.
Yeah. It's sort of a 3-0, as you say, like we're getting into the halftime whistle. That much of a comfortable lead, it really was comfortable. I just didn't really see Southampton getting back into it unless we made a monumental error, which luckily we didn't seem to do. Into the second half, then Josh and Theo Walcott duly added a fourth and clinching goal. This is, of course, after Alexis Sanchez, who's supposed to be having a little rest, but you just can't keep him down, can you? And it sort of further adds thought or fire to my thought, shall we say, that that he's one of these players that performs at his best level when he's continually playing rather than having a rest. So he pops on and sets up Theo for his second goal and Arsenal's fourth. Sort of two questions within one, really. Your thoughts on Theo Walcott's performance, obviously, and that goal, and were you a little bit surprised to see Alexis brought onto the pitch?
I think we'll start with the point on Alexis. I'm not too surprised that he came on. We don't have any other wingers that you would have rotated because they were playing. Well, you'd look at someone like Ashley Maitland-Niles, or you may be looking at Chris Willock that we would have had to brought along with us. And I think when you look at the bench, I don't think there was any point really bringing someone like Chris Willock along. So Alexis gives you that diversity of allowing you to give a night off to Giroud, and also have a winger on the bench. He's kind of multifaceted in that way for how he can play and how you can kind of put him out on the field. So it was good to see him get on. Welbeck got a good 60 plus minutes in his legs, which is really good to see. And Theo played absolutely superbly. Hasn't looked like he's missed a minute of action. And yeah, just to be in the right place at the right time to latch on to that Alexis pullback and get his second of the night.
Good finish as well, wasn't it? Classic Theo Walcott finish. And you mentioned Mr. Minute there. Makes excellent keys if you ever need a key cut for your door. Ellis, your thoughts as well on the clinching or the hat-trick clinching goal, the fifth goal, which was, again, from Mr. Walcott. Another assist from Alexis as well. At that stage, was it just kind of shooting practice? I mean, it was another tidy finish, wasn't it? And I should say as well, was it the fifth or the fourth goal, the pass from Lucas Perez? I think it was the fifth, wasn't it, that put Alexis through?
I think you're right. Yeah, I think it was Lucas for the fifth goal.
Yeah, he played it from the left-back position.
Of course it was, yeah, over the top. Delicious pass. And yeah, Alexis in behind and slots it across to Walcott, who duly takes it for 5-0. So yeah, what was your kind of thoughts on Theo as a whole? And yeah, your thoughts on that goal as well to wrap things up?
Yeah, I thought all three of sort of Walcott's goals in this game were the typical Walcott goal. Not much time to think about it, just sort of not quite laying on the plate, but laid into a position where you just have to hit it and not think about it. But they all went in. It's one of those goals that you expect Theo Walcott to get when he does have time to think about it. He sort of dawdles on the ball a bit too much and then ends up sort of wasting the chance or playing the wrong pass. But I thought, like you said, that Lucas Perez, a lot of the players today, the sort of pre-assist players, played those good balls and it's completely missed all of the midfield and set sort of players like Alexis Sanchez and one that was obviously Danny Welbeck for Theo's first goal away to then cut it back to Walcott. And like Josh said, he was in the right place at the right time yet again for that third goal and he put it away nicely. But like I said, I don't know if it's the opposition we're playing, but we just seem to sort of, we'd be at one end of our pitch. We'd pick the ball up quite deep on our own half. In this case, Lucas Perez, sort of like Josh said, at the left-back position, plays a lovely ball out to Sanchez. He's out there. Those sort of two players are drawn towards him. And then Walcott's got all this space and he's sprinting up there. Sanchez finds him and he puts it away. It was sort of a bit, the game sort of over now, and probably the Southampton guys weren't as eager to get back as they might have been if it was 1-1 or a close game. They were dead and buried, really. So, but a hat-trick is a hat-trick at the end of the day, and that's only going to fill Theo Walcott of confidence going into the rest of the season.
Agreed. And Lucas, a little bit unlucky late on to not get a goal himself. Do you know, I was livid that Alexis didn't let that ball go for a corner. If I needed one more corner for my bet. And the silly Chilean twat kept the ball in play. He could have just let it go. I mean, does he not think about my needs here?
Fuck's Get him sake. Out. Get him out.
Get that fucking banner down and shoot his dogs. Not having it. please don't, if anyone's listening to the RSPCA, I am joking. Or am I? Right. Let's talk a little bit about obviously sort of individual performances and sort of overall thoughts on some bits and bobs throughout the game that we might have picked up on. So we should talk on the big elephant in the room, as far as I'm concerned. It does make me laugh when you do these shows, because you venture an opinion and you share that opinion, and then everybody holds you to your every word. I've had so many people tweet me tonight going, "Oh, Lucas Paris is good. See, you said he was shit." No, I didn't. Never said he was shit at all. I just said I remain unconvinced. And I have to say, even now, I'm still a little unconvinced, because he has had some very good performances against some poor sides, and tonight was another one. That said, I thought he was very, very good tonight. His movement was superb. His touches in the final third were superb. Obviously, the assists or pre-assists, whatever you want to call them, involvements in goals, shall we say. So what was both of your sort of thoughts on his performance as a whole and him as a signing? Because it was very much, I think we were very much on the fence. Oh, Lauren, I got a penalty. Lovely. We were very much on the fence when he came in. Was he Arsenal's first choice signing or not? I think we're all glad we didn't get Jamie Vardy. So, Josh, do you want to start us off? What's your sort of view on his performance tonight and overall your thoughts on how he's performing in the side when he's given a chance?
Yeah, I think he was certainly benefited from Southampton's defending today, because it gave him that time and space to get on the ball and dictate what he wanted to do. I think it was a great performance. I think there's no way around it. I'm still a little bit sceptical about him. I don't want to continue banging that drum that I don't think he's Arsenal quality, because he certainly is. But I think he's still trying to find his feet, and Southampton, with the way that they played today, definitely played to his strengths by not closing him down with the kind of intensity that you'd expect from a Southampton side when we've met them in previous years under Koeman and Pochettino. So should he start next game? I don't know, because we've got the Ox as well, who I think we'll come on to in a minute. Both of them are vying for starting places, and I don't think both of them will be in the next lineup against Chelsea or Watford, if we got midweek.
Watford Tuesday and Chelsea on Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think we'll see them in either. Well, I don't think we'll see Lucas anyway. I think the Ox might come on, but I think we'll go into that later.
I think we'll probably see more likely to see Theo Walcott and, lovely penalty put away. Ellis, what's your sort of thoughts on his performance for Lucas? And again, which sort of side of the argument do you... Argument's a little bit harsh, actually. I don't think it's really an argument, but which side of the fence do you sit on? Do you sit on the side that sort of says, well, you know, he's done very, very well in flashes. Technique is clearly very good. You know, he's played in a league which, you know, basically is all about technique rather than entertainment. But it's you know, you can't argue with how he's performing, can you? There's not much anyone could say to say that he's not doing everything he can to make an impression on a game when he starts.
No, I think you're right in what you said earlier. I don't think anyone's under any illusions that Lucas Perez was our first choice signing in that area this season. It was very well documented in the papers and other media outlets that we're after Jamie Vardy, and obviously it didn't happen. We're all pretty glad that it didn't happen after seeing him this season. But I think if you can't get your first choice, then you need to not just completely ignore it. You need to have like an option B or even an option C. And I think Lucas Perez was that option B, and I think he is a good option. He's not, like Josh said, he's not the first choice striker. I think he is Arsenal quality, but as a reserve at best. I wouldn't want him to be starting a very big, hard game in the Champions League or the Premier League, for example. But these sort of games against Southampton in the Cups, yeah, go for it. Maybe a sort of a lower league team in the Premier League. But for the sort of big games, you're going to want your Alexis Sanchez, Danny Welbeck, Giroud, Walcott, Iwobi. I don't think he really gets in unless there's an injury, and then he might get in that way. But saying that, he's done well when he's been called upon. He's obviously got a hat-trick in the Champions League this season, and when he has played, he has contributed to goals, whether it be an actual scoring opportunity for himself or an assist, or even just being involved like he was in the final goal with a great ball that then set Sanchez on his way to set up Walcott. So he is a very good player. I think For me personally, when he was linked to us and we found out that we were signing him, I didn't have a clue who he was. I'd never heard of him before. I'm not massively into the league. I only watch sort of the big teams when they're on the telly, so I wouldn't know much about him anyway. But I've been pleasantly surprised with him when he has played. And it's good, like I said, to have these options. It's not just a few seasons ago, it used to be if Giroud was injured, we'd have to play Sanogo. And that wasn't good enough. Now we've got, when Welbeck's fit, Welbeck. We've got Perez. All three of them, except from Giroud, Welbeck, Sanchez, Perez, Walker, can sort of play across that front three. Some of them are better on the wide and not quite good up front, but they all have their attributes and play in those positions, which is incredibly versatile and only good for us, really.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, I think it's very difficult, isn't it? Because other people would potentially argue that and say, well, he hasn't had the big games, so how do we know if he can perform in the big games? You know, it's very, very difficult to know until he's given that chance. I just think that when you bring in a player where essentially it looks to me like we've given up on the idea of him as a number nine, even though he is number nine, if you see what I mean. It seems to me like the wide forward is the option that Arsene Wenger wants to play him in. And if that's the case, then that's fine. You know, but only play him at that, and let's keep giving him the games like this to keep improving. And the one thing I do like about him is he's got that grit and that bit of sort of edge about him. And he does strike me as a player that the other players seem to like playing with, if that makes sense. He seems to be a player that people link with well, and they seem to understand him well. And he strikes me as quite a giving player rather than sort of a greedy player. So that's got to be a good thing. And as we say, and as you've just put in the chat there, Josh, he's very selfless, unlike Alexis. That's just mean, but I know what you mean. Yeah, I think, you know, if we can get something out of him, if we can get a tune out of him to the end of the season and potentially build on it in pre-season as well, then we're all going to be all the better for it. So here. And if people think I've been harsh on him, then I'll continue to be really harsh on him if he keeps performing like that, because obviously the reverse jinx is working quite well. So good luck to the lad. Let's move on to another player we should talk a little bit about. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, you mentioned him there, Josh. What did you make of him then? Because I think the problem that the Ox has had, as well as his injuries and his almost lack of belief in his own game at times, is the sort of never really having a really certain secure position. He's played deep midfield, he's played central midfield, he's played high up midfield, he's played off a forward, he's played wide, never really seemed to find the right position. His dad always said he'd be a good central midfielder, and okay, limited opposition, we have to say that again, but he did look the part tonight, didn't he?
Yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. I've got him down as man of the match, even though Theo got a hat trick. I think one thing we have to look at is where his passes were coming from. Especially the three crosses in the first half, he was all drifting out to the right-hand side when he was playing them. So I think he's still a right midfielder. That's where I'd prefer him to play, especially when we've got someone like Mesut Ozil in the side, which is more regular in our lineup. I think as Gunaholics put in the chat, that we played a 4-3-3, which we haven't seen a three-man midfield for a while under Wenger. The last time we saw it probably was actually when the Ox played in Milan, the other game that we call and herald as being his breakthrough game, where the midfield was him, Alex Song and Thomas Rosicki. There's no real number 10 in that lineup. So I think he's got the same problem as Rambo does in the side, that he would flourish in a system that doesn't have a number 10. So I think we need to have a look at, we can't have another Ramsey in the side. So I think his best position is out on the right or out on the left. And we go probably for the right because he's better at crossing than I think anyone else in the team, as proven tonight. But yeah, I think some of the passes he made this evening, the one on 88th minutes near the end that Lucas contrived to miss. And I think the commentators on BT Sport said that he was absolutely apoplectic in the middle of the midfield when he saw Lucas had missed it, because it was a fantastic ball. And if anyone hasn't seen it, it's a outside of the right boot clip over the back four and just perfectly weighted so that Lucas can come onto it. And I'm no striker, certainly not one that you'd pay £18+ million for, but I would have gone for lobbing the keeper in that position because he was in no man's land.
Yeah, it did look a little bit like he could have potentially loved it there. But I think the thing that I noticed in particular today was that it looked to me like we actually changed formation. To me, it looked more like a 4-3-3 to kind of work with the players that we actually had available in the team. And I think Arsene Wenger gave something away yesterday when he actually mentioned Daisy Maitland-Niles and Oxlade-Chamberlain when he was asked about, well, you've only got Coquelin and Ramsey, so will they play? And he said, well, I've got these two. And he mentioned Geoffrey and Adelaide as well. So I think he actually changed the formation today to sort of suit those players. And the beauty of when you train a team in a system, whether it be from youth level all the way up to the first team level, to all play the same way, is that players can often rotate, can often sort of change around positions and do different roles within a formation. I thought we saw that tonight, and I think it's a big feather in the cap of Arsene Wenger, because you know he does get a lot of stick for being tactically inept, which frankly is ridiculous, by the way. You don't do 20 years at a club the size of Arsenal if you're tactically inept. I get so tired of hearing that. But you know, he gets a lot of stick for it. And I think tonight he got it spot on with the players that he, well, maybe not that he had available because he had others available, but for the players that he chose to pick, I think he picked the right system and the right formation to suit them in. So well done to Arsene. Ellis, another player I wanted to just touch on sort of briefly, really, because his performance will go under the radar a bit tonight because obviously it was a 5-0 scoreline. But Rob Holding, another step in his development ladder. Was he the lad? He reads the game very well. I saw him talking to, I think it was Anthony Maitland-Niles in particular, on several occasions, you know, talking to him throughout the game and coercing. He seemed to fit. He fits with Mustafi well as well. It's quite possible that we've got a real talent on our hands here, both for the future and for now. And when you've got someone like Per Mertesacker back on the bench today to learn from in training as well, his career looks like quite a promising one, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course, you don't want to sort of get too out of hand. We've had, only in recent seasons gone by, Chambers sort of started fairly well and then sort of dropped off the radar, and is obviously now at Middlesbrough on loan. Obviously, he's just got an injury as well, which doesn't help him, but he's doing all right over there. But yeah, like you said, Holding, when he has come in, similar to Lucas, when they've both been called upon, they've done really well. And what is sort of a good thing to see from Holding is, despite his sort of young age, he's so calm on and off the ball. He rarely seems to panic. And like you said, he worked really well with Mustafi, which was, for me, quite surprising, because he's not, if you're going to liken him to any of our centre-backs, I'd probably say he was more of a Mertesacker, not particularly fast, but quite good positionally and good the ball at his feet. I wouldn't say he was sort of like Koscielny. I think he's probably quite different to Koscielny, but he did work quite well, Mustafi, today. And I was pleasantly surprised. Again, though, it is a team that has had a lot of changes, so perhaps in a bigger game he may have been tested a bit more and we would have really had a better idea of how we would cope in those games. But he done well, and I think that's all that matters. And as long as he keeps progressing that way and we don't sort of rush in him, and we've got Koscielny, we've got Mustafi now, I think there's no doubt in saying that those two are our first choice centre-backs. But it's good to know that when we do call upon Holding, if we need to, then he can step up to the mark. And like you said, he's got someone in Mertesacker who in recent weeks, I've been quite disappointed with the reaction of people who've been angry that Mertesacker's had an extension. I think he's perfectly fine to be a third or fourth choice. And like you said, it's not just what he contributes on the pitch, it's what he contributes off the pitch and in training. When you've got young guys like Holding learning his trade in centre-back, and you've got someone like Mertesacker, who I know he's got his critics, I know he's not fast, everyone knows he's not fast, but he's a World Cup winner, he's a good defender, and he can put that information, he can teach Rob Holding and show Rob Holding how to be a good defender. But yeah, he's a good prospect. And I think, as well as Chambers, sort of both Holding and Chambers could have good futures ahead of them with the international team in England and also with Arsenal. Because I'm not like you guys, I'm not hipsters, I don't know who's coming through. But to be fair, I can see them doing well in the future, definitely, especially Holding.
Well, I think I'll speak on behalf of a lot of people here when I say fuck England, as long as they're at Arsenal. So, you know, quite frankly. But yeah, it's as we all know, of course, he didn't cost 50 million and he isn't part of a Pep Guardiola project. Therefore, he can't be as good as John Stones. Well, I think he is. easily as good as, technically at least, if nothing else. And I think when you put, as you've rightly said there, Ellis, you don't want to big up a player too much, because I think that's exactly what's happened with John Stones, who's, you know, obviously clearly a very talented footballer, but he's not a very good defender at all, in my opinion. And I think when you put so much pressure on a player that you're stepping them into the limelight and playing them week in, week out, you know, that pressure intensifies and it can kill a player. So, you know, I think we have to be careful how much we big up these players at this young age.
I think it depends who we're playing them next to as well. I've got to remember, John Stones came up through the ranks and was playing with Jagielka, who, as much as everybody hates or might not necessarily like him, he was a very, very good defender and helped talk him through his game, which is exactly what Mustafi is doing with Rob Holding, communicating, telling him where he needs to be. He's moved to Man City, he hasn't got that. He's got Otamendi, he's got Mangala, he's got Kolarov next to him. The guys aren't hiding to nothing at that position, and on Per as well. I think a lot of people would very ready to dismiss him, but we've got a guy there who could be a future manager, and we keep saying that we're getting rid of players like Arteta, who went off to Man City, and Vieira, who also went off to Man City, to get their coaching badges. I think we need to keep players, especially near the end of their contracts, who have got that ability to become great coaches. And I think Mertesacker is one of those, and we need to keep him there because, as we say, he's never had pace, so he's going to be able to teach players how to read the game properly, because he's never had that ability to use his pace to make up ground on any mistake he's made. So I think what we've got there is a player who will become a player coach, and probably is already in that respect.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mike and Andy had a very good debate on it on the Gunners in USA podcast, where they had AJ, formerly of Arsenal My Blood, I think it was, podcast this week, as a guest, and they had a good debate on that. And I think Mike started out by saying, you know, keep the money, spend it on a player we could do something with, etc. And by the end of the argument, I think he was very sort of like he turned the opposite way and gone, actually, now I can see why we would keep her. And I think, yeah, a player like that, you have to keep. Oh, Lauren, I've got another penalty. Happy days. You have to keep a player like that experience-wise and to help younger players learn. And for me, Per Mertesacker is still definitely third choice, I think. I mean, I think he's streets ahead of Gabriel still. And only Koscielny and Mustafi should be in front of him, in my humble opinion. So, yeah, good business to tie him up for another year. Okay, should also just touch on a couple of other players. We've kind of had a little bit of a say on Danny Welbeck, but maybe we should have just a little bit more each from you, just on how much of a contribution you maybe expect him to make or want him to make. I don't know which way to put that, but Ellis, start with you. Do you expect him to have quite a big say in the second half of the season?
I don't know. I think everyone's got a part to play, really, in the second half of the season. That Chelsea, especially in the Premier League, they've sort of got these amount of points. I know Liverpool have got them next week, and then we've got them the week following. So even though Liverpool, like I said earlier before we start the show, haven't managed to beat anyone except from Plymouth this year, hopefully they can take some points off Chelsea, and then it's not the situation that we normally get ourselves into and we normally do well. It normally, the season's gone by, it will get to these sort of times in the season, you'll see the league leaders, and we can't take points off and we'll generally put our poor performance. But if we are going to mount a considerable challenge and actually challenge Chelsea and, dare I say it, get past Bayern Munich, then we are going to have a fully fit squad, and we're going to have not just the starting 11, we're going to need the players like himself to sort of get involved and do well when they're called upon, like all of the guys you're sort of seeing today, like we've mentioned throughout the radio show, that they need to come in and they need to perform, because at the end of the day, people like Giroud, we know he's had a great form, but he can easily go into last season and go 6-7 games without scoring a goal. So we need guys to step up and play well when they're called upon. And I think these guys sort of, they did do it today.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And if Danny Welbeck ever fancies taking penalties for Lorient, then I'd be very happy for him to do so, because the one I've just watched was absolutely fucking horrendous. Anyway, Josh, what was your sort of thoughts on Danny Welbeck's potential sort of impact he can have on the second half of the season. I think we probably all agree that he's a little way off starting at the, you know, the highest level, the Chelsea games at this stage. You know, he's only just come back from basically a year off. We're very quick to forget that, but you know, he could have a very big say. And you know, if he notches 5 or 6 goals between now and the end of the season, that could make a difference, particularly when he looks as sharp as he does tonight.
Yeah, I think with Danny Welbeck, we'll probably see him in contention for a starting place probably around late February, early March. That's when he'll be back to, I think, full fitness, especially match fitness. But we'll have to see, because, you know, this is Arsenal. Giroud could get injured. Alexis could get injured. Touch wood, they don't. But there is all that possibility that Welbeck could be brought in earlier than we want. I think we're in quite a good place at the moment that we, apart from central midfield, we're not trying to bring through any injured players too quickly, because we haven't had those injuries that we normally do. I think at centre mid at the moment, that's why we saw the Ox and Ashley Maitland-Niles play, because we need to, can't take risks in that particular area. And it's just great work from Wenger and the rest of his team to make sure that we're not left with having to play the Ox and Ashley Maitland-Niles in those two positions against the likes of Chelsea.
You just pulled a Carpenter there and called him Ashley Maitland-Niles. I do that all the time. Ainsley, is it? Ainsley, yeah, Ainsley. I do it all the time.
Lots of habit.
Yeah.
I've just got him written down as an acronym.
It's my fault, really. I've been saying it for months. It's like Danny's bloody ACPOM, is it ACPOM, APCOM? Oh, I don't know. Anyway. Jesus Christ, honestly. You drew him on Thursday. Some of those names he butchered. My good God. It's amazing we have any listeners, really. Anyway, yes. So, only other sort of player I just want to touch on tonight is the Jeff. This is not taking anything away from the likes of Theo Walcott, who obviously got a hat-trick and was very good. Kieran Gibbs, captain of the side, did very well. Thought David Ospina, barring one incident where I did have a little bit of a heart flutter, I thought he did very well. I loved it when he just took the piss out of two forwards by just turning inside twice. I love that. Big Ospina. Great stuff. But, Jeffrey in Adelaide, I'm a little bit concerned at sort of how highly people rate this lad when really they haven't seen anything of him yet. I think that's my only concern. You know, we don't have, like, getting excited about a player, you know, we've seen one or two glimpses of in pre-season. See Sonogo for that. But he was good tonight. He's, you know, he's a very good athlete. He's very composed on the ball. You know, he's a very decent sort of looking player as far as the future goes. Do either of you, or are either of you, prepared to make the case that he should be more involved in the first team at this stage? Personally, I don't think he is, but I'm willing to be open to different opinions. Josh, you obviously had a bit of a thing for him tonight. So do you want to state the case for why you think he should be in and around that first team squad at the moment?
I think he is at the moment. So long as there's no crucial games in the reserve league that we need him for, he should be, you know, that man on the bench, or the 19th man. I'm trying to work out how many people there are now. The man that travels with the squad in case one of them gets injured on the bench, so can fill that gap. So he just gets in and around the dressing room, which I think is what he's doing at the moment anyway, that he's travelling with the away squad to make sure that he's there if required. And I think this season won't be his breakthrough season. I think it will be next season, to sound like a Liverpool fan, to say it's not his year.
We'll come on to them in a minute, don't you worry. Ellis, are you on the same sort of path? I mean, I saw a little bit of him when he was at Lens, not a huge amount. I saw more of Yassin Fortune, who's the other lad who came with him at the time. And in my opinion, Fortune is the more exciting player. He's actually better technically, I think, and he's quicker. We haven't seen anything of him yet, so could be for a reason, of course. But with the Jeff, I mean, are you sort of in that kind of keep him back a little bit and just keep his development going stage, or are you all for thrusting him in at the deep end and seeing how he gets on?
Well, I haven't got a clue, to be honest. I'm not like you guys. I haven't seen him play before. I don't watch the sort of the youth teams play, so I don't have much of an opinion based on any facts around him, just because I haven't seen him play. But He seemed to do all right today. I know Josh was impressed with his performance. Seemed to like him quite a bit and likened him to Diaby before he got injured in the group chat. But I think all you can do is perform when you're called upon. But I haven't really, in the other games this season in the League Cup, I've not sort of seen Jeff and thought, hey, you played all right, you look good. I think you deserve a chance in the first team. So it's hard to sort of, for me, to put an account for him to be involved in the first team and start playing. He may well be, like Josh said, the guy who's there if someone pulls out off the bench injured, then he can come on. And that's fair enough. Like, if he does get his chance that way. I mean, we've seen the likes of Kokan and Bellerin sort of, didn't know much about them other than what they'd done in the youth squad or what they've been doing on loan or wherever. I think Kokan was at final, was it before he came over here, whatever. But if he does get his chance and he takes it, then fair enough. But I can't really put much of a defence for or against him because I haven't seen enough of him to know, really.
No, that's a fair comment. I don't, again, if your people are honest, unless they watch a lot of the reserve games, they probably would say the same thing. So, no, I think you're absolutely right. It's you just want to sort of see the development continue. And obviously, if he gets a chance, then, yeah, if he impresses, then you keep him in. But for the time being, I think our squad is deep enough to say that we don't have to push him in too far. So we'll touch on the other results in a second and take some listener questions. I just want to just ask you guys, you know, taking a step back, obviously, the podcast, I got a lot of people laugh at me in the podcast of the week because I always felt we'd be comfortable today. I went 4-1, so I was just slightly out, but I genuinely felt we would be comfortable today, and it turned out that we were. But how highly should we rate this performance? I mean, we have to be realistic and say that we didn't have a particularly strong side out ourselves because we didn't need to. Southampton's squad was arguably even weaker. So, not to take away from any of the performances today, but should we just temper this a little bit and say, you know, we can only beat what's in front of us, but what was in front of us was not good? Or do you look at it from the other side and say, well, actually, as our friend Ross, who's a Southampton fan, said, we didn't allow them to get into the game. So just want to get both of you to give us a sentence on that, if you would. So, Ellis, do you want to take that one up, first of all?
I like to be a bit pragmatic when I sort of analyse performance like this with Arsenal. I don't want to get too carried away, like you said. In the end, yeah, you're right, we didn't really let them play, but when you look at both teams on paper, even though we did make quite a few changes ourselves, compared to that Southampton squad, we're sort of quite, our level is a lot higher than that, so you'd expect us to win, but we did win in style. So a 5-0 win against anyone, especially a Premier League sort of team, especially a team like Southampton, who have in the past knocked us out of cups and sort of been similar to Swansea, that sort of bogey team that can upset us every now and again. So that it can only be a good thing to win 5-0. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the season, it's not these games that are going to matter. It's the games when we play sort of the top six. And if we don't get a win out, or we don't sort of turn up to those games, or if in the Champions League and we play the likes of Bayern like we do, or Barcelona, or wherever we always get every year, if we don't turn up to those games, and it's hard to really say that we've progressed or we're doing well. But yeah, it's hard. I don't want to sound too negative because we've won 5-0. It's a good thing, but I don't want to get too carried away either, because the season's got a long way to go yet. There's still going to be a lot harder games in the FA Cup and a lot harder games in the other competitions throughout the season. It's those hard games where this team needs to turn up and show what they're really made of, because in all honesty, in the seasons gone by, we haven't done that.
Great. Yeah, great. And Josh finishes off on that one. Do you sort of go full positive? Do you go a little bit in the middle, or do you go, yeah, but we played a team that were really not at it tonight?
I think on the last point, yeah, I agree with that. Southampton's cup final is, you know, coming up now. I think they're all looking towards that as opposed to the FA Cup. I don't think it's a tournament they want to really look at, to be honest, because they need to get into Europe, and this, the best chance is in that League Cup final they've got. And at the moment, the Premier League's looking pretty tight. So I think that's where their priorities lie. Some people won't like that, but if you look at it in context, this wasn't Puel just throwing out a squad that he didn't want to win the game. I think it could have done, depending on what we put out, but we just, you know, blew them away And you can't be too negative or negative at all, to be honest, with a 5-0 win, as much as you want to be. Maybe Welbeck should have got his hat trick. That's the most negative thing I can say.
I don't want to be negative. I'm, you know me, I like to be positive. No negativity for me. I think you just have to be, you know, you will get some people now that will go off and say that, you know, that we're favourites for this, favourites for that, we're going to win all this, win all that. It's like, yeah, you know, there's every chance. You've got to keep positive, of course you have, but you just have to temper it a little bit and say, yeah, we've beaten a side in front of us tonight that hadn't played together very well, but we still beat them. We dispatched them clinically, I thought, and thoroughly deserve the praise that is going to come their way and the praise that will rightly go to the manager and the players themselves. So fair play to them. Just before we take some listener questions, which we will, we should just touch on the other games of the round as a whole. We saw Middlesex fluked a last minute winner against the European super club that is Wickham. Well done, Bellends. Liverpool. Should we talk about Liverpool? Should we have a laugh at the good old Liverpudlians of this world? Played Wolves at home and lost. Klopp in, anyone? No, all gone quiet. Josh, do you think that's a good thing that a side of Liverpool's size have gone out of the competition? Or do you actually look at it and go, well, they've not been very good for quite a few months now. Arguably, would you have not been afraid even if we had have drawn them?
Yeah, I don't know what you're thinking about Klopp not being able to replace Wenger. He got knocked out of two cups in a week. He's got everything to come back in and replace Wenger from previous seasons, especially around the March time. You know, it's the only thing, if he can keep Liverpool in cups longer, then maybe he could. But yeah, I think we've got a great chance with the way that the draw's coming out. There are still those big teams in there. You've still got Chelsea marching through. You've got Man City went through. Do have Tottenham, which would be nice to make sure we end their season nice and early if we get them in the next round. But other than that, yeah, I think this is a tournament we can win. And I think Arsene Wenger will be going for it because he'd love it to, you know, get his 7th FA Cup for a competition he's always been told he doesn't take seriously.
Yeah, I agree with that. And any other teams that you worry about, Alice, that you look at that draw now and you think, don't really want to draw them? I mean, there's genuinely no team that I look at in there and think I'm panicking about. You would expect Man United to beat Wigan tomorrow, so it's likely that they'll be in as well. So Jose can have yet another excuse to talk about our manager. Twat. Yeah, I mean, there's no other teams that really worry other than the obvious candidates.
Yeah, other than the sort of the obvious guys like you mentioned, sort of Man United, Chelsea, they're sort of the guys that you'd want to avoid. But it's, you sort of want them teams to be involved as far as they can be in that competition. Otherwise, like Liverpool now, we joke about them being out of it, but they're now not in any other competition except from the Premier League. So they're now going to go into every game completely fresh. No other like sort of midweeks, any breaks like that. When people are having breaks like us in the FA Cup, they'll have a complete weekend off to prepare for the next game. So it's a bit worrying for other fronts, but in the FA Cup now, I wouldn't really even be worried about potentially drawing United or Chelsea, because Chelsea, they are on a massive run at the moment, and I think if you were to get them in the FA Cup, depending on sort of what time we got them, they may have more important games on the horizon in the Champions League and the Premier League, so they may even rest a few players for the FA Cup. As for United and Jose Mourinho, that's always a hard game. Like, not got a great, or Arsene Wenger hasn't got a great record against Mourinho, so that would be difficult. But we had them a few seasons ago, didn't we, in the FA Cup when Danny Welbeck got that goal that put us through. So I think in the FA Cup we've always been quite good, really. So even if we did get a big team, I wouldn't be that worried. And it's always nice to sort of knock out a big team anyway, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you've usually got to beat at least one good side to win a tournament, unless you're Porto in the Champions League all those years ago. But yeah, I mean, you generally have to play somebody who's pretty good. So yeah, bring it on. I say, and there's no point speculating on the draw because we don't know who we could get. But I must admit, I'd like a nice sort of, yeah, lower end side at home, like an Oxford United or somebody at home where we can afford to rest players and, you know, give people a bit of time off. That's what I would prefer personally. But We shall see. Okay. Let's take a couple of questions to finish then. Who's been doing them in the box for me? Josh, you've been doing them in the box for me, haven't you? So well done. You've just volunteered yourself to ask questions. So off you go.
I was just trying to type about the Lincoln game in the chat box.
Oh, yes, they won 3-1, was it? 2-1.
They did. It was 3-1 in the end because I was watching that game. I don't think, because I'm trying to reply to Josh, who was saying it was potentially like a Bradford City for us. With the team that Brighton put out, and if you have a look at the goals, Brighton basically gave them all those chances. It was two Brighton players that assisted two of the goals. The other one, I think, if I remember rightly, was a penalty. So, yeah, it's. I don't think it would be that bad when Richie Towell can score against you, who is not a good player.
Hibernian legend.
You're generally not that great. I think we can get past them. However, first question I'll go for is from Julia Brown. And I'll go for Ellis. Do you think we missed Walcott giving balance to the team?
Yeah, I think we have, really, to be honest. Like Danny mentioned a long while ago in the chat box about how we sort of set out at the start of the season with that that fluid sort of front three with Alexis, Walcott, Awobi, sometimes Oxlade-Chamberlain, and you could probably even put Danny Welbeck into the fray now that he's sort of getting back to full fitness. And I think we have sort of missed that balance. I think without Walcott on the wing, Sanchez isn't quite as good as the sort of lone striker, which is why we've probably seen Giroud sort of taking that mantle of Sanchez moving out a bit wide. And I do think now with Walcott, we've got another option to play sort of Sanchez up front with Walcott and the other guy sort of moving around. He definitely gives us that option, because if you're a defender and you see Walcott, Alexis Sanchez, Awobi, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Danny Welbeck, you'll sort of think, these guys are a bit pacey. You sort of step off a bit and you get worried. So it is good. And if that doesn't work, you've then got Giroud who can come on and you can completely change the style of your play or build-up play to an attack. So we have missed him and it's good to have him back, really.
Cool.
Well said. Yeah, carry on, Josh. Sorry.
That's all right. I'd forgotten that you were not hosting and it was me now. I think next question goes over to you, Chris, and I'll go for one from Christopher Howard, because I know Stefan also wants this, Stefan Selby wants this question asked. Could the Ox be the perfect fit in central midfield for when Santi hangs up his boots? So I don't know if that's whether or not he's a like-for-like replacement of Santi. I think Stefan's implying that he could be a like-for-like replacement in terms of the role he plays in that team. So what do you think?
I see where he's going with it. I'm going to say no. I think he can play centrally for us. But I think it's almost a twofold question, because I think when Santi is no longer a first choice player, or can no longer be considered a first choice player, which is obviously sort of fitness will be a big say in that. And you know, how he comes back from this injury, if he does, I think we have to start thinking about changing the way we play rather than sort of replacing him like for like. The other thing I would say is that I personally don't think Arsenal currently have a midfielder in Santi Cazorla's class or anywhere near it personally. I don't. His two-footed sort of ability, his ability to quicken or slow down the pace depending on you know what time of the game it is, his eye for a pass, and yes, I know people will say Oxlade-Chamberlain had a great eye for a pass tonight. Yes, he did, absolutely, but has he done that consistently over the time he's played for Arsenal? I would argue he hasn't. So even when he's played in wide areas, yes, he's a very good cross of the ball at times, but not on a consistent level, pulling the strings the way that Santi does. So I personally would be more inclined for us to spend a considerable amount of money to purchase another midfielder when Santi goes, not to replace Santi, at least not to replace him in terms of style, but to replace him in terms of quality. So yeah, I would rather see us break the bank and actually get, you know, another Ozil, Alexis caliber player to fill that role, because I don't have the faith that Ramsey's good enough to do that role. I don't think Xhaka's good enough to do that role. Coquelin's certainly not good enough technically to do that role. And for me, Oxlade-Chamberlain, the other thing you've got to bear in mind is he's only played that central role, what, 4 or 5 times for Arsenal? He's got me playing it at least 6-7 months solid before I could even consider playing him in there and on a regular basis, you know, moving forward. So, bit of a long-winded answer, but you know me. So, short answer is probably not. So, good question, though. Shall I ask you one, seeing as you're going to go missing otherwise? So, shall I ask you one?
Yeah, why not?
Cool. You can have this one from Josh. Josh Kekluskas. Thoughts on Zelalem? Oh, come on.
No. Sorry,
Thank
I was on mute.
Goodness.
Sorry, I was on mute as well.
Honestly, one job, guys. One job.
With the way your internet is, I thought you'd gone.
No. Fair point. Anyway, on him, did you see this bizarrely snarky interview with a Dutch journalist when he went to VVV Venlo? I think it was just him not really. He doesn't strike me as a sort of very camera orientated guy. And a lot of people have read into this. Have you both seen it, first of all? Oh, you haven't seen it, Josh. Okay, so I'll give you another question in a minute. Have you seen this, Ellis?
No, I haven't seen it either, to be honest.
Oh, this is what happens.
Describe it.
Live show. Well, basically, a reporter comes out to him and he essentially collars him as he's walking. You know, like when they get out of the dressing rooms and they have a little walk from where they are in the dressing room across the training pitches. So you see the Arsenal photographer take pictures of the players walking down that little area. So he's got one of those in Holland with this Dutch club. And the cameraman's sort of following him and he's trying to get a live interview. And they say, "Oh, are you very happy?" And Zelalem's like, "Yes, very happy." So you're looking forward to being here? Yep, very much looking forward to being here. Is it good for you? Yep, great for me. are you looking forward to, you know, getting some players up? Yep, definitely. And he just, you know, it's all very direct, blunt answers. And I think a few people have read into that and said, oh, he clearly doesn't want to be there. He's been sent there. Well, newsflash, when you're a player of that age, you do what you're told. And if you're not developing at the level that, you know, you probably should be, then sorry, you don't get to make the decision. And at his age, he needs to be playing football. You know, I think he has got a lot of talent there, but I think it's going to go the Serge Gnabry route in that his talent will be looked at elsewhere. I just can't see him getting into that midfield we've got. We already discussed the options we had tonight. You know, this was a game tonight that surely he should be in contention for. And if he's not, and not even in the squad, obviously pre-loan this is, then I just can't see him getting games. So, you know, the Rangers loan was the key one, and, you know, he didn't get games after coming back. So I just don't think it's going to work out for him at Arsenal, but hey-ho, it is what it is.
I think it's all about, sorry to interrupt, it's all about sort of the opportunities you're given. And I think you're right in saying he has been given the opportunities, and it's up to the player to sort of grasp and take those opportunities. If he doesn't, the harsh fact is that you're not going to really make it, not at a club like Arsenal, maybe at another club possibly, but you're only going to have a few simple opportunities to take. And if you can't take them here, then that's the harsh reality of football, really, isn't it? You're not going to make it at that club.
Yeah, we're seeing that with Dan Crowley at the moment, with him being sent away to Holland to potentially get away from a bad crowd, I think, is the reasoning there, because he was doing quite well at Oxford United before he was sent back, and he fell out with the manager for his extracurricular activities.
Yeah, indeed.
Speaking of Dan Crowley, there was a question from Ash Wilton for you, Chris, saying, how good can Dan Crowley become and how far away is he from the first team?
He's a mile away from the first team. How good can Dan Crowley become? It depends how good Dan Crowley wants to become. He's got a bit of Jack Grealish about him, a bit of David Bentley about him. He likes he seems to like a lot of things away from the pitch a bit too much for my liking. And, you know, we've seen this before with players, and, you know, Ravel Morrison's another great example there. Some players, for whatever reason, they get a bit of money and it goes to their head. And some players do it, you know, intentionally because that's what they want from the life of football. Other players just get their head turned. Saida Berahino is another one. You know, it's players that have got talent but never fulfill the talent they have. To be signed by Arsenal in the first place, they obviously see a lot in the kid. And, you know, the reports we got when he was at Villa, he was, I think, he's the England under 17 or under 19's captain, wasn't he? So he's clearly, you know, he's clearly got a bit about him, but he's been influenced by some people, you know, in the wrong ways, I think, so far in his career. And now it's down to him to sort himself out and make a real impression within the club. So I think his best mate being Jack Wilshere, we probably should have seen the warning signs maybe. But if I had to put money on it now, I'd say he'll be another one that will go the Bentley route. You know, that he might get the odd appearance for Arsenal and then flitter his way down to sort of Reading or somewhere like that. So we'll see. Hopefully not. Hopefully he does come good. I must find one for Josh because I feel bad now. We've kind of addressed Unique 79's question about Rob Holding, how composed he is, good partnership with staff. We kind of addressed that one earlier. So listen back for that one. We'll combine two questions into one here, Josh. Carleone Jackson, would you start Oxen at 4-3-3 with Coughlin and Ramsey against Watford as a dress rehearsal for Chelsea? And on the back of that, I'd also like you to speak about our good friend Mr. Hollick's question. Would you stick with the 4-3-3 against Watford? So what do you make of that, Josh? Would you be inclined to do that?
I think a 4-3-3, it depends where you want to play Mesut Ozil with that. Are we going to put him out on the wing or not play him at all? I know there's a lot of conversations with that at the moment, especially with him and Alexis's contracts being a delicate situation at the moment. If will they, won't they? Maybe we need to start a chant like we did with Theo to get them to sign that ting. But at the moment, no, I think the way that we're playing, we should stick with the 4-2-3-1 that we're playing at the moment and just slot Ozil back in, because Ozil's got that majestic ball, range of passing that he could just break through that 3-5-2. What was the 3-4-3 that Chelsea play?
Oh God, if you don't know, I don't know. 3-4-3 generally.
It was 3-5-2 today, I think, and they played 3-4-3 without Fabregas to bring his name up. Unfortunately, however, yes, I think we should stick with the current system we've got. 4-3-3 is something we should look at because Ramsey is so good in that system, and I think the Ox could flourish in that system as well. We're getting a number of players now that are being played in a system that doesn't suit them, and it's all coming down to Mesut Ozil being that man that's not necessarily holding them back, but not allowing them to get to their full potential of what they could do. So it's the case of, do we get rid of him or do we get rid of the two others who can't necessarily play in that system if they start getting a little bit aggy?
Yeah, that's fair points. And you can mention Cesc Fabregas in this parish if you want. I mean, you know, he's whatever anyone says, he would walk into our midfield right now. I'm sorry, he just would. So don't worry, you can mention him if you like. I'm kind of with you. I think the Watford game, you know, the 4-3-3, I have a sneaking suspicion that we will probably revert to type for that game. You know, Watford will come with, they will park the bus, I would imagine. They're not particularly brilliant away from home. Not particularly brilliant at home, actually, full stop. They're not particularly brilliant. But I think they'll probably come with a game plan of trying to shut us out. And playing the way we did today is great when a team allows you to play that way. Not sure Watford will allow us to play that way. I don't think they'll be half as open as Southampton were today. I think it'll be very much a rear guard action. So, you know, we have to have our creative players in the right positions to pick those holes. And I think you'll probably will see Ozil back in and Monreal back in. Who else is missing today? Giroud come back in, I think. And yeah, I mean, you know, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because if he plays similar players and we lose to Watford, then all of this today will go by the wayside. So, you know, the reason he's rested players today was for that Watford game, you would suspect. So, and of course the Chelsea game upcoming. So, no, I think I'd be inclined to make a couple of changes and hopefully dispatch Watford, although I have a feeling we might be in for a long night on Tuesday. Just my hunch, shall we say. Okay, let's just get some final thoughts from you both then before we wrap this sucker up. Just final thoughts on the overall, the overall performance of the night and what you rate our chances are to go all the way and lift a seventh FA Cup under Arsene Wenger. So, Josh, you can start us off.
Sorry, I was on mute. I think with the game, with March on the FA Cup, it's a great competition. Whatever anyone else tries to tell you, it is the second greatest cup competition that we're involved in, I think. And we should always be going to win it because we've got this great history with the FA Cup. You know, we're currently joint top winners. We think on 12 with Man United.
Rings a bell. 13. I always forget 13.
Yeah, 13, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
So just to do that and get Wenger in seventh, I think, yeah, it's a great result and we continue on in the cup. I would expect us always in the FA Cup to get towards the quarterfinals or semi-finals because we show consistently each year with the fourth best team or above in England. So we should be getting to the fourth best position or above in the FA Cup. I think that's the way we should continue. And yeah, I'd like us to win it.
Yeah, I'd love us to win it. I'm with you on that one. Ellis, would you like to win it?
No, would I fuck? Why would you want to win a trophy? I'd rather come fourth place or whatever they say we want to do.
Fuck the FA Cup and fuck Humber as well.
That's illegal.
Hey, Mike's onto something here. I don't trust the way he looks. There's something wrong about that dog.
I don't know which one's which, to be honest. I'm not gonna lie.
Can I just say before you give your thoughts, actually, just very quickly, there's just a tweet that I've just seen, which is brilliant, which is a picture of Arsene Wenger and Steve Bould at training. And Arsene Wenger sort of got his hands out like that. And it simply says the quotes is 64th minute. What the actual fuck, Steve? So I had to give that a shout out. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, of course, you want to win the FA Cup. I think our chances are pretty strong. Like, if United can win it last season with Louis van Gaal in charge and the side they put out, I think we're perfectly capable of doing it again this season. We've got a better side than what won it then. It does depend on the draw and where it fits in with the Premier League and Champions League and stuff like that. But generally, I think, yeah, we've got a really good chance of winning it. I wouldn't be massively scared of playing anyone in the FA Cup. I know you've got, like we mentioned earlier, your Chelsea's and your Man United's, but it's one game, and as long as you step up and you play that game, you can do all right. But yeah, you know, you can't not be happy with a 5-0 win. Like, if you're not happy with that, then you need to sort of have a good word for yourself and see if you actually enjoy football, because a 5-0 win is obviously good compared to anything other than anything higher. But yeah, it's a good result. It was nice to see some of the other guys. Like I said, when I first saw the team, a bit worried about the amount of changes, but they all sort of performed and it was good. It was fun. It was nice to watch a good game where we got a few goals, and good to see Danny Welbeck back. Like, I think I've missed him. And that celebration, the old salt meme thing, whatever it is, he was fucking loving it, wasn't he?
I just thought he was really camp. I'm not really down with the kids. I just thought he was a bit camp. I don't know. I don't really understand. As I've been regularly mocked on this podcast for, I clearly don't have any fashion sense or young down with the kids hip sense. So,
especially, you know, when you phrase it like that.
Yeah, exactly. Just a quick rant to finish on, if you like, actually. So as some of you know, I turned 34 this week, not 40, as Danny tweeted from the pod account. Thank you, Danny. I was 34.
Nice.
You two are young, hip gentlemen. Why is it that a man of 34 cannot buy a pair of jeans that are not surgically sellotaped to the skin or have the knees cut out? I don't understand. I haven't been skinny since 1994. I do not wish to wear skinny jeans, and nor do I wish my testicles to be crushed within an inch of my life in order to get into the things. So, you know, just if anybody, you know, do write in. Let us know where I can get a decent pair of jeans that are not going to break the bank.
I guess skinny jeans don't really go with your boots either, to be honest. I don't know if you'll be able to fit them over your boots.
Well, this is also true, you know, boot issues.
You fit them in the chat box.
You 40, fit them 40, under 40, the boots. 40.
Well, I mean, you know, I've got demands in life, and a good pair of jeans with the boots out are some such demands. So, you know, it is what it is. It frustrates me. And I know some people, it's a little treat. The people who listen back on the podcast won't be able to see this, but if you want to know, yeah, the sheets are on. There they are. So, you know, It's all looking good in the Carpenter hood. So with that little nugget of love, I shall leave you there. But yeah, if you can find a decent pair of jeans in my size that are not
Jackamo, mate, they do all sorts of sizes. Bit of Freddie Flinton for you.
I'm not that fat, you cheeky bastard. I'm getting there. I hear Danny shops at Jack. Actually, no, Danny doesn't shop at Jackamo because that means he'd have to get out of bed to
shops are big and beautiful. Whatever it's called.
Toolman.com. Anyway, this has gone off the cliff big style. So this is what happens when you win 5-0. It all goes off piste. But no, it's been a pleasure. Thank you to everyone who's tuned in today and listened to us rant on about the Arsenal. It's always fun to share some views with you all. So thank you very much for your support and time. Also, big thank you to Jason, who covered me very kindly last week as well. I didn't get a chance to do that off air, so I'll do it on air. So thank you, Jace. Keep an eye on everything. Podcast obviously was out for the week on Thursday. We got blogs coming up next week. I think Drew's up next with a blog. And we'll be back after Watford on Tuesday. No idea who's going to be here. Somebody will be here. It might be me, might not be. Who knows what day of the week it is? Nobody knows. But we'll be here talking Arsenal. So continue to lend us your ears and eyes, if you will. If you do like what we do, there's a little thumbs up icon down there on YouTube. I don't know how it works. I'm convinced every time you press it, Danny gets 15 quid. I'm convinced that's how it works. But he assures me you don't. But if you can whack the old thumbs up if you like us, and if you don't like us, well... whatever. But thank you very much for joining us. My thanks to my guests, to Ellis and to Josh. Thank you, Terrible Twosome.
Terrible? That's a bit mean. No, but thank you for having us on. I think we lighten things up with our love-hate relationship that we have going on.
It's like podcasting with Stop It and Tidy Up. It's great fun.
I don't know what you're referring to.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Right, I'm ending it
right
now.
Come on, bring your references up.
Honestly, you need to get educated in TV shows of the 80s, you two. Seriously. Anyway.
No, 35 going on 50.
What was that game show that happened in a make-believe castle? I think I watched that once.
Let's have a look at what you could have done.
Takeshi's Castle?
Good grief. Anyway, it's good night from him. And it's good night from them, and it's good night from me. So thank you very much for joining us on AVW Radio. We'll speak to you very soon. I'm off to buy a pair of jeans. Good night, everybody.